Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. My wife and I, Cheryl and I, were watching the Weather Channel, and they had a documentary on the secrets of the Earth, on the Earth's magnetic shield. And it had a theoretical physicist, Michio Kaku. He's very well known. Emphasis on the theoretical, though. And he had a geophysicist with him on the show, Daniel Lathrop. And what Lathrop said about the Earth, we just paused it, we stopped it, we talked about it, and I transcribed it so I could read it to you guys. Daniel Lathrop is a geophysicist with the University of Maryland, and he said this about the Earth's magnetic field. He said, over the last 150 years or so, the Earth's magnetic field has declined in strength about 10% and continues to decline in strength, as is evident every time people go and make new measurements. That stunned me because that's very rapid decay. And young Earth creationists are comfortable with that kind of data. But people who believe the Earth is 4.5 billion years old, I mean, what do they make of that? So one of the very well-known creationist physicists is Dr. Russell Humphreys. He was awarded a PhD in physics. And something very common that we all study all the time, right? Cosmic rays and ultra-high energy nucleon and nucleon interactions. Pretty neat stuff. And then he spent years working in the high-voltage laboratory of GE, General Electric Company, designing and inventing equipment and researching high-voltage phenomena. And while there, he became an award-winning physicist and also received a U.S. patent. So really neat guy. He's a young Earth creationist. But what makes Dr. Humphreys really famous to so many of his fans, including Fred Williams and I at Real Science Radio, is his extraordinary predictions about the magnetic fields of the planets. And I especially love his uncanny predictions about Mercury. But if I had a chance to ask Dr. Humphreys a question, I'd first like to ask him about what I heard on this Weather Channel documentary about the Earth's rapidly decreasing magnetic field. And so it turns out we have Dr. Russell Humphreys with us. Dr. Humphreys, what an honor to have you on Real Science Radio.
Well, it's an honor for me, too.
Well, thank you. And could you tell me about this? I believe you've written on this topic of the Earth's rapidly decreasing magnetic field. First of all, is the data reliable?
Yes. In fact, I was surprised that Dan Lathrop got it just about right. I would say 9.3% in the last 150 years.
All right.
But quite right in saying about 10%.
About 10%. And Russ, was I accurate in saying that young Earth creationists are comfortable with this data, but for those who believe the Earth is billions of years old, this is somewhat hard to come to terms with?
Yeah, they have an out, but it's not a very good one. And the out, first of all, yes, young Earth creationists are very comfortable with this rapid decline of something as large as the Earth's magnetic field. That's very unusual. Nobody would have expected it before it was found. And for a long time, the secular scientists didn't talk about it. But the pioneer creationist, Dr. Thomas Barnes, started publicizing this back in 1970. And then I've just been working off and on not only the Earth's field, but planet magnetic fields ever since the early 80s. So I keep finding out new things. In 1984, I made these predictions you're talking about.
Yeah, about the planets. But to stick with the Earth for a moment, if the Earth
I didn't really answer your question yet.
Yeah, that's all right.
Trailed.
We want to hear the background and all the historical color. I love all that, Dr. Humphreys. But if the Earth was 4.5 billion years, you wouldn't expect to see a lot of transient events. Like just when we happen to be looking, the magnetic field decreases in its energy and its strength 10%.
And decreases this fast, too, yes.
Right, this rapidly.
The only thing they can say is that it may be part of a magnetic reversal in progress. Back during the time of the Genesis flood, the Earth's magnetic field reversed its direction between 50 and 100 times during that 1 year. And we have actually rock evidence that it changed that fast. But since then, it hadn't been changing that fast. And the evolutionary picture places those reversals as happening over millions of years. So you wouldn't expect that we'd be right here now when a reversal is happening. So,
yeah, as with changes in the surface of the moon, changes in the rings of Saturn, there are so many transient events in the solar system, even comets that only survive for thousands of years. It would be uncanny if the solar system were 4 billion years old that we're seeing all these things happen. And we're seeing them happen rapidly, like the decrease in Mercury's magnetic field. Yet we are. And so when things are happening and you're seeing them wherever you look, the implication is that things are not billions of years old, because then they would have arrived at a stasis, a very stable state by now.
You'd think so. But the other guys keep trying. So yeah. They haven't given up. So.
Yeah, they don't just cry uncle. Could we talk for a moment then about reversals? It seems to me that it's easy for the other side to confuse people when we talk about a decay in the strength of the magnetic field, and they say, well, there have been a lot of reversals. They're not the same thing, right? A reversal is when the poles switch.
That's right. Reversal would be a rapid change going right through zero and to the other side, to the other direction. Whereas what we see looks like it's fading away slowly and will never reach zero, which is fairly natural behavior for things like the Earth's magnetic field. You would expect it to just tail off. For mathematicians among us, we would say exponentially, which means it's decreasing by a constant percentage every year, but it never would reach zero.
So that it has, at the current rate of decay, it has a half-life of only some centuries.
Yes. The half-life is about 1,100 years.
Wow. And so if you took that backward and extrapolated backward, you wouldn't be able to get to an Earth of millions of years, so that the old Earth physicists, they need to come up with secondary assumptions and rescue devices to explain the decay that we're seeing on a global scale.
Yes, and they actually have no real theory, a working theory, one that gives you numbers and explains things, how big things are and such. They just have sort of a hand-waving theory that's been with us, since 1919, nearly a century.
That's their dynamo theory?
The dynamo theory. It's really a series of theories with a lot of work being done on them and changes being made. But as of yet, they really don't have a theory that should be able to say how strong the Earth's magnetic field should be at any given time. So,
well, and then
work.
If they did, ostensibly, they'd be able to apply it to Mercury also.
Yes.
And to see this dramatic drop in the strength of Mercury's field that you predicted, that I know we're still going to get to in a little bit. So their theory would have to account not just for the Earth, but for the other planets. And what that reminds me of is the theory of planetary formation. That was the standard theory that was so popular, about gas giants being formed outward, smaller rocky planets being formed closer to the sun, and the size and the orientation of their orbits, until all the exoplanets have been discovered, the evidence of them. And now you have NASA scientists saying, you know, our theory of how solar systems form, pretty much it's useless, because
That's right.
We find more data and we find out the data doesn't fit our theory at all. So it's sort of like that with the Earth's magnetic field. They had a story about a dynamo, but the more data we get, the more difficult it is to maintain that story.
That fellow Dan Lathrop you mentioned, I have emailed him a few times. For the past couple of years, he's been running an experiment which I thought had the closest, best chance of all the experiments to actually simulate what is happening with the Earth's magnetic field. And
that's at his nonlinear dynamics lab at the University of Maryland, right?
That's right. And its particular experiment's called the 3-meter experiment. It's got a 3-meter diameter stainless steel sphere with a cooling jacket on the outside. It's filled with molten sodium, about 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Then inside the molten sodium, there's a hollow sphere 1 meter in diameter.
All right.
That simulates the Earth's inner core. So the Earth has a fluid core, and it has roughly the same proportions as his experiment does. And then he can spin the outer core very rapidly in one direction and the inner core very rapidly in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just very rough calculations would say that if the dynamo theory has a chance of working, it has a good chance of working in these experiments.
Right.
But as of 2 years running the experiment, Dan has not published any data about the magnetic field at all. He's published papers about how the fluids flow.
Yeah.
In the sphere, but nothing about the magnetic fields. They haven't, apparently, have not been able to simulate dynamo action even with this biggest of all experiments they've done.
That's got to be difficult for them to take. As a young Earth creationist, I'm convinced, I'm not an expert by any means, but I could read and follow the progress. I'm convinced that they never will confirm that the Earth has a dynamo because it doesn't.
I did some calculations last year and published them in the International Conference on Creationism Proceedings.
And I was there at the conference.
Oh, you were?
Dr. Humphreys. Yeah, in Pittsburgh. It was a great time and enjoyed your presentation. So thank you for that.
So, yeah, the calculations I did think are pretty good ones, relatively simple for dynamo theory things. But it looks like the Earth just isn't big enough and doesn't spin fast enough to come anywhere close to meeting the threshold where dynamos might work. It just can't do it.
So then, Dr. Humphreys, and you are a physicist, you're qualified to analyze these issues. When you talk about the evidence, I'm going back a step, of reversals in the past. And as we believe, if there are reversals, that would have been a prime time during the global flood. Where in the rocks, when rocks solidify, if the rocks have some magnetic elements within them, they would line up as the rocks are hardening, they're freezing from molten lava, magma to solid rock, then the orientation of the Earth's magnetic field will be detectable how it was when that rock hardened.
That's right.
So where do we find rocks that they measure and they say, look, the pole has flipped all these times?
Well, the answer is everywhere. It's very common. They've been doing these measurements now, actually since the 1960s. Everywhere you find pole layers magnetized in different directions than they are, than the field goes today. You know, for example, almost all Permian geologic strata all over the world record a reverse direction. In almost all Cretaceous layers all over the world, that's one of the dinosaur layers, record a normal direction.
So then if a pole flips, and not being a physicist, just being a talk show host and a Bible church pastor, pastor of Denver Bible Church, I would envision if the poles of a giant magnet are going to flip, so positive becomes negative and negative becomes positive, I would envision that as something that would happen rapidly. Like you said, it has to pass through zero. And if it happened very slowly and you got to zero, isn't there a likelihood that the field would never continue? It would just die?
If it's reversing by the mechanism that I think it happened during the flood, no, it would continue on. It would go right through. It would have some inertia, so to speak, in its plunge.
Okay, so inertia, right. So, but that's why I was thinking, if it was something that happened very slowly, a reversal over 5 million years,
yes,
would there then be a risk that when you got to zero, it would die or not really?
Well, yes, except I'm not sure I can imagine a way that it could happen that slowly.
Well, right. Very good. Okay. Russ, could we talk about what happened when NASA sent a spacecraft to Mercury way back in the 70s? 1974, 75, and they were shocked to find that Mercury had a magnetic field.
Yes, they were. That was Mariner 10, and it went by, zoomed by Mercury during 1974 and 1975, and they were shocked to find that it had a field, because Mercury just does not spin fast. It has an 88-day period of rotation, and they figured that was just too slow and that the planet was too small also to produce any magnetic field at all. So they were very shocked to find that it had a magnetic field about 1% of the strength of the Earth's magnetic field.
Mm-hmm. And so, then you published a paper in 1984, and you made a couple predictions about Mercury. But go ahead, continue with your account.
Mercury's field was good news for me because it told me that Mercury's field should be decaying fast, just as one would expect from its size core. My 1984 theory gave initial values of the magnetic field for each planet and for the sun and the moon and for other bodies out there. So I had a peg point on my graph for the starting value, and then the 1975 data gave me another point on my graph, mm-hmm. and the slope of that straight line on a certain type of graph would give you a 5% decrease of the field from 1975 to 2011. The reason I picked 2011 was because that's when a second satellite went into orbit around Mercury, and that was MESSENGER. And the MESSENGER spacecraft took up a tight orbit around Mercury, and that swoops pretty low over the North Pole and then swings out over its South Pole and goes around many times. So
it's orbited the planet thousands of times now.
That's right. They have a lot of good magnetic data.
So when MESSENGER was being launched, Dr. Russell Humphreys, were you following that project step by step with great anticipation?
Oh, yes. In fact, I do that with almost all the space probes. Very interested. All the space probes have returned data that were just very helpful to creationists, and they point back to the creator of the whole solar system.
So what did they find out with MESSENGER then?
Well, what they found out was that the magnetic field of Mercury had decayed by more than 5%, by nearly 8%.
Oh, my.
That's just an astounding, and, you know, that's at least three times faster than the Earth's field is decreasing.
Mm-hmm.
So they were astonished, and they were not expecting that at all. Although there's been some indications that some of the guys at JPL and NASA were familiar with my work, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow, I was happy about that.
Well, I guess so.
I can explain the 8% instead of the 5% with a minor tweak on my theory. I hadn't thought about the possible effects of Mercury's core heating up in the past 6,000 years. That would increase the resistance of the core. So its field would be decaying a little bit faster now than it was at the beginning.
Yeah, and you had two data points. That's not a lot of data to set a trend, but your prediction came awfully close to what was then actually measured by NASA. And that was in 1984. These results came in 2011, but you're really spanning quite a period of time, right? Because you got to go back to the 70s. For that first data point.
That's right.
So 36
years from 1975 to 2011.
Wow. So more than a third of a century, and the young Earth creationist comes in with an astounding fulfilled prediction. And their prediction would have been what? They believe that Mercury is 4.5 billion years old. So what would they have predicted would be the change in that time?
They would be thinking that things should have been pretty constant, that things, like you said before, should have kind of settled down in a few billion years, and it just should be at sort of a steady state now.
Right. So they would have predicted virtually no change, because 36 years is a blink of an eye in their time frame.
That's right.
Wow. That wasn't the only prediction you included in that 1984 paper about Mercury, right? There was another?
Yes, there was another one, and, you know, I just plain forgot about that prediction because I was thinking, well, the prediction is that crustal igneous rocks from, you know, rocks that were once molten on Mercury should be strongly magnetized, because in the past its field would have been much stronger than it is now, according to my theory, and so we should be able to find magnetized rocks. with the field of strength that is today, the rocks would not be measurably magnetized from space. But I was thinking, when I made the prediction, that astronauts would have to land on Mercury and bring back some rocks like they did from the moon.
Right.
They would be measured in Earth's laboratories. And they sharpened up some of their techniques since I made the prediction, and they're actually able to make that measurement from orbit as Messenger swooped over the northern plains, northern lava basalt plains of Mercury. They found out they were strongly magnetized. I calculate that the field had to be at least 10 times stronger than it is today, at least, and it could have been much more when those rocks cooled down. It suddenly hit me when they made that measurement. Hey, well, I made that prediction too.
Dr. Humphreys, so with those two Mercury predictions being confirmed from your 1984 paper, then that sort of rounded out the field, because you had a total of 5 predictions in that paper. And those were the last two, I think. So now they're all verified. Could you remind us about the other predictions?
Okay, yeah. The other was sort of like Mercury's crust. The crustal rocks of Mars should be magnetized. Oh, let's see, when was it? Some years ago, a Mars global surveyor swooped pretty close to Mars crust, and they found a pattern of magnetizations, stripes like we see in the Earth's ocean, of normal and reversed polarity, big stripes, and the magnetizations were pretty strong. And Mars doesn't have any magnetic field now. My theory had been saying that in the past, it too would have a strong field, and whenever rocks formed and cooled down, they would record a strong field. Turns out Mars crust did exactly that also.
So that prediction, and then how about some of the more distant planets?
Okay. In 1984, no space probe had visited the planets Uranus and Neptune. And so my theory gave a rough numerical value for the strength of the magnetic source of those two planets.
Sure. And we could link to all this material, so which we'll do.
And roughly speaking, the strength of their fields at the surface would be pretty much the same as the strength of Earth's field at its surface. Anyhow, I had these numbers that my theory was giving, and so I just published those. The prediction for Uranus from the dynamo theorist was for a very low field for Uranus, because their theory depends on heat flowing from the planet's core out through to the surface, and astronomers can measure how much heat is coming from the
surface of Uranus,
and it's not much.
No.
So they thought it would be a very low field. I was saying pretty strong field. When the Voyager flew by, it said, it's a pretty strong field, just like Humphrey said. Gave pretty close to some of my numbers.
So, and Voyager helped to confirm your Uranus and your Neptune predictions.
Yes.
And
the dynamo theorists, when they saw that Uranus had a strong field, they said, well, Uranus and Neptune are pretty much alike. They're sort of sister planets. So we'll say that Neptune will have a strong field. And then Humphreys already had said that Neptune would have a strong field. And then the space probe said it has a strong field.
Yeah. So, well, congratulations. If you were an atheist, materialist, physicist, you may have won a Nobel Prize by now in physics. But you're a creationist.
Well, actually, no, because my theory is of the planetary magnetic origins is so Bible-dependent.
It
depends on the material that God says.
Yeah, well, I agree. But I'm saying if you were an atheist and you had similar types of predictions come true in a materialist sense, you may have won a Nobel Prize. But you're a Christian, so your accolades come from the Lord and from those of us in the body of Christ that are so thrilled to be able to give an answer to those who ask.
Well, if the Lord has something like Nobel Prizes in the future, I hope to be in line to get a few behind Isaac Newton and Michael Faraday and James Clerk Maxwell and Henry Morris.
Yeah. So. Could I ask you for one issue, Dr. Humphreys? A friend of mine was set to debate a world-class scientist years ago, Bob Dietz. And I have a scan of the Arizona Republic article announcing the debate with both of their photographs in it. And Bob Dietz is one of the fathers of plate tectonics, and he coined the term seafloor spreading. When you mentioned the magnetic stripes on the ocean floor, that conversation came up between Dietz and a friend of mine. And according to that account, there are no stripes of reversals. The stripes at the seafloor spreading is just of greater and lesser intensity of the field, but no reversals. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, I've heard it ever since I heard about the stripes.
Okay.
But the theory behind the stripes is that beneath the weaker field stripes, there are reversed rocks, rocks of reverse polarity. Indeed, when they do borehole drilling into those regions, they find reversed rocks.
Okay, well, that is a very fascinating bit of information. Thank you. I'm so glad I asked you for that, Dr. Humphreys. And we are out of time. We're going to link to your papers and your articles. Is there something you'd especially like us to take note of?
Well, those reverse rocks are of a spotty character, and they point to very rapid formation of the seafloor, which Bob Dietz wouldn't like. He'd like it being formed over millions of years. I've met him. He was at a Creation Research Society meeting once.
Oh, he was. Where was that, in Phoenix?
It was in Arizona. Prescott. It was in Prescott.
Oh, very good. I've been to the observatory there.
Yeah.
The Powell Observatory? Just beautiful. So, all right, Dr. Humphreys, thank you so very much. What an honor to have you on Real Science Radio.
Well, it's an honor for me, too. Thank you.
God bless you. That was Dr. Russell Humphreys, PhD. What a fabulous time I had. I hope you learned a lot about the decrease in the Earth's magnetic field, very rapid, just like Mercury, showing that God created not only the Earth, but our cosmos, the universe, in the recent past. May God bless you guys.
Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.
Hi, this is Bob Enyart. At Real Science Radio, we have a great science store online, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store, and there are two fabulous DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. These are by a dear friend of Real Science Radio, Spike Pisaris, and Spike has created simply the greatest astronomy DVDs ever produced. And we have gone through probably hundreds of science DVDs and books, and we recommend only the very best at our store, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store, and you'll love these astronomy DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. You got to get them.